You're listening to episode 138 of the Mad Chatters podcast, May 17th, 2017.
Most everyone's mad here.
Welcome back to another episode of the Mad Chatters Podcast, your very important date with the happenings at Walt Disney World and around the Disney universe. My name's Derek, and as always, I'm joined by my fellow host, Matthew.
Hey there.
And Jeremy.
Those aren't my potatoes.
Oh, whose are they?
I'm trying out new catchphrases.
Is that from something that I should know?
No, it's a Jeremy original. I'm just testing the waters with it.
So, guys, it's only a week after our last show, but I kind of feel like we're recording in an entirely different era now. Last week, we were in the Wishes era, and now it's all about Happily Ever After.
It's yes, like this the New is Covenant. We're in the B.C. A.D.
A.W. It's A.W. now.
A.W. after Wishes.
Yeah. Aw. So, true confessions. I fully planned not to watch this because I'll be seeing it in a couple weeks. I didn't want to be spoiled. But after hearing so many things about it online, I caved. I watched the replay of the live stream. And I want to talk about it. All the spoilers involved. If that's cool with you guys.
Sure. I have not watched it. I've had a very busy week, but I'm open to it.
I feel like you're implying that I didn't have anything going on this week and I have no life.
It has been mentioned.
It's like 17 minutes.
We watched it with friends at the house, so we were having a life and watching it at the same time.
Nice.
Wow.
Okay, so Matt, I want to know your take first because, I don't know, I feel like you didn't enjoy it as much as I did. It's just a guess.
Why would you say that? Is it because I'm grumpy?
It has been mentioned.
Once. Hey, let me ask you this question. Before I say my opinion, what has been the consensus of folks online? Like, what's like the main thing you read and bam?
I'll be honest. I have not seen one single negative comment about it. Most of the comments I read were like, whoa, Hunchback. Like, that's just a fact. Like, the majority of the statements were like, Hunchback is in it.
I mean, can we quote you on that?
John from Illinois says, whoa, Hunchback.
Hey, yeah, okay. So, I liked it. I did not like it. Okay. I was in a sense, first of all, I've been saying since we've started this show and many years before that Wishes should go away, one, and we should get something new. And when we get something new, that something new should be a combination of the fireworks show, as we all know and love, with the projection mapping type show that they've been doing for, what, almost 7 years? It's either 7 or 8 years. So that part I'm all for. You mentioned Hunchback, but Mulan shows up. Big time Mulan shows up, and then there's Hercules, and a lot of those that just don't get that much attention that are featured.
Two Tarzan songs.
Very prominently from the late 90s. It's almost like Disney starting to actually accept the fact that a few people do like some of those movies. So they're featured heavily, along with the classics. Okay, I'm all for that. I gasped when they started the I Can Go the Distance part, and the part that I Can Go the Distance was like almost the finale song. I loved that part. I liked the I liked that they included in the show, again, this is big spoilers, I liked that they included in this show some of my favorite moments from some of the projection shows and fireworks shows in the past, such as the I See the Light portion from Tangled with the lanterns that float up the thing, and then the Pirates segment with the fireworks shooting at the castle, and it looks like it blows up, and there's smoke and fire and stuff. So I loved all that stuff. Loved that it was something new. I loved that it was longer. I loved the score. I loved the original song. here's what I didn't like. And about 10 minutes through, I was like, oh, so this is what this is. I think it has the same feel that Disneyland Forever has. Now, here's the difference. This one isn't supposed to be based on the theme park. This isn't called Walt Disney World Forever. So that's the difference. But you know how Disneyland Forever, it's called that. It was for the 60th anniversary of Disneyland, but it ended up just being a montage of popular Disney songs, and that's all it was. So about 10 minutes through this one, I was like, that's kind of all this is like a medley of popular Disney songs with the kind of loosely held together storyline by the narrator that pops up maybe two or three times, but not enough for you to really know who he is or why he's talking or what the storyline is. And then that's it. Now, before you say that Wishes was the same thing, it was a montage of Disney songs. Yes, it was, but it was a medley, original medley with original score of those Disney songs woven together to tell this one kind of seamless story. It wasn't, here's this song, cut, here's the next song, cut, here's the next song, cut, here's the next song, cut. And I think that's where this one went, to the point to where it was kind of draggy at times. But overall, much better show than Wishes in terms of improvement and combining things like the projection and the fireworks. Much more high energy, I think, and lots more of those gasp moments for people who really just like to see familiar characters and hear familiar songs. So for that, I would give it a good 7.5 out of 10.
What? Oh my word, no. At least a 9.
Oh, I thought you were going to say I was too high.
No, they pulled out all the stops for this thing. Like, my first thought when it finished was, that was expensive. Like, that had to have been so expensive.
Oh, it was very expensive, no doubt, which makes me wonder how long they'll do it before we start noticing less fireworks. But we'll see.
Because for an 18-minute show, like, that's a lot of bursts. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of explosions every single night. But I mean, for real, like, they set off a lot of fireworks in those 18 minutes. And I was impressed.
Yeah, fireworks-wise, I have no complaints. Even projection-wise, I have no complaints. I guess it's all in the music and the show element where I have the complaints.
I'm going to argue with you for a second about the storyline. I feel like, first of all, Wishes, while it did have a story, I mean, some might say it was a little in your face, like the whole make a wish and your dreams will come true. Like, it just said that a lot. But I feel like Happily Ever After was just saying, these are all the things that you will come across in your lifetime as you search for your Happily Ever After. Because the whole beginning segment was about friends. Because you had Toy Story, You've Got a Friend Like Me, and then You've Got a Friend in Me, and then also A Friend Like Me from Aladdin, and you had the Tarzan Trash in the Camp stuff. And then it moved on to love, but not romantic love. It was like family love, because it played Love is an Open Door, which is about sisters. And then
it's about fake love between the guy that really hates her and...
Right. But anyway, it played that, and it played You'll Be in My Heart. So that whole segment was about love. And then the Mulan quote was about the flower that blooms in adversity is the rarest flower of all. And then it goes into the big fill-in segment. And I think that was saying, like, you're going to face some adversity, but if you overcome that, then you'll be stronger. And at the very end, it was about... that's where Mufasa said, look inside yourself, and it played Go the Distance.
Okay. Was that Mufasa? Because on the thing, yeah. I couldn't tell. I was like, this is the Hercules song. I couldn't tell if it was Mufasa or if it was Zeus sitting on his throne.
No, it was Mufasa. It was the quote about look inside yourself. And then they sang Go the Distance, which was like, pull everything you have from inside and then you'll find your happily ever after.
Yeah.
That's what I took from it.
Well, no. Yeah. And that's fine. I guess it's the segments. Like, here's the friends segment. We're going to play all the Disney songs about friends. And here's this segment. We'll play all the Disney songs about that. And then here's it. And again, I know Wishes did that. They featured songs about certain elements, but it was original score. It changed. I mean, you think about the love/princess medley in Wishes. I mean, they changed up the what's the tempo? They changed up the Be Our Guest to that kind of waltz. the 3-4, da-da-da-da-da, you know, and they changed up things about it. And it was like, well, this is the same, it's familiar, but it's different. This was like, this reminded me, and I don't mean this is going to sound very insulting, but it's just the way that it was. This reminded me of, like, you're going down to the 4th of July fireworks at your local downtown, and they're going to compile every song that talks about America in this segment, and every song that talks about this in this segment, and every song that talks about this. And there was no change. It's like, here's this song, this chorus from this movie, as if we went on to the Disney Classic CD and ripped one off at a time.
Nope, I totally disagree. The Love is an Open Door was like some weird emo version.
That was the one that was
No, Go the Distance. I have never heard a woman and man duet sing Go the Distance.
That was nice.
And also Trash in the Camp had a very, like, even jazzier than it normally is. And the way the fireworks were, like, going off to that jazz beat was so cool to me. I think they did take some liberties with some of these arrangements. I think whoever composed this music did a really good job of finding clips that went together and putting little twists on them throughout the way.
Let me say, yeah, there are some differences. I would put those differences in terms of arrangements, not that this fits together like one. This isn't so much of a medley that produces one big score as it is to me like a remix playlist.
Yeah.
And again, that's not really like a complaint. It just is what it is.
Okay.
And so that's what I was bringing into it. And the immediate thing I thought about 10 minutes in was the Disneyland Forever thing, which was, you know, this is a montage of Disney songs in which we play the majority of, if not the whole song, directly from the movie. With minor differences here and there to some things, but not enough to say, this is the original whatever score. The only original thing that comes out of this to me is the song, the theme song, Happily Ever After, which is wonderful at the beginning and at the end.
Yeah.
I still had goosebumps and okay. I got the gasps. And
listen, you're allowed to think all those things, and I'm glad you liked overall. I'll just give my overall take. I'll be honest, I went in all week, I've just assumed that I would be kind of disappointed by this show. I don't know why, but I just felt like it's not going to be as good as Wishes. I really was blown away by this thing. I really don't know what there wasn't to love, but some of my favorite things. First of all, I love that all the projections pretty much kept the castle shape. Like, Once Upon a Time, as far as I'm concerned, can go away now. Like, there's no need for that show before or after the fireworks. I don't know when they play it. But that is just projecting scenes, using the castle as basically like a movie screen and projecting scenes onto it. But Happily Ever After, like, really kept the castle shape the entire time. And they did cool things with it. Like, they turned it into Tinker Toys. That was one of my favorite segments. But it still looked like a castle. And they even, like, outlined it sometimes, like, the castle shape. And I really liked that because it should be that way. It shouldn't just be, like, a big... You unrolled a big projector screen in front of the castle.
Yeah, that's not what it's for.
Yeah. Another thing I did... I will say, I loved... As much as I loved the Hunchback segment when he sang Out There, like, I was almost about to shed a tear. And then the very next scene was Merida, which I care nothing about.
Oh, I like that.
And then in the same segment, like, Lightning McQueen drove by and you hear the rum rum. And I was like, oh, what a buzzkill.
Yeah, I liked the inclusion of the song. What's her little song?
Chase touch the Sky. And touch the Sky.
Yes.
I like that.
Yeah, it's fine. I like the song, but
See, there it was. It was like, here's this, here's, here, what was the song you were just talking about before the Meredith?
Out There.
Yeah, here's the Out There, and then here's this song, and it's the core. It's like, da 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 da. So it's a complaint, but not a complaint. It's like, I'm just calling it for what it is. People like, as much as, I think you said that Wishes was in your face with the story, but I think that, I guess people don't really care about stories so much as long as they have the characters and the music that they know and are familiar with in front of them.
All right. Well, I love the spotlights, by the way. Those things are awesome in the background that shoot up into the sky. So many fireworks. I just really love this show. And I gotta say, I love the song. It kind of sounds to me like an anthem that an American Idol winner would be given. Like, happily ever after. But I still love it because I think it's perfect for a Disney park. The only questions I have, I'm kind of surprised that When You Wish Upon a Star is not part of this.
Briefly.
Is it?
At the very beginning, yeah.
Okay. That makes me feel better. Because I'm like, that's kind of a staple in Disney fireworks shows.
No, I remember. I was like, oh, I'm glad that that's in there somewhere. You know, they had to. It was very briefly at the very beginning.
Okay. And I feel like almost every 90s movie from Disney is included in this thing, except Beauty and the Beast. Not once. Do you think that's because it's so heavily featured in Once Upon a Time?
Wait, not even like Be Our Guest?
I never heard any songs.
You know what? That's probably what it is, because it is so much in Once Upon a Time, which is like Chip and Mrs. Potts, right? The whole time. They're like the narrators.
Yeah, but that's just a shame. I don't know. That was my only takeaway from it, but I loved it. Can't wait to see it in person.
I don't. And then listen, before everybody goes on and starts hating on Matt's negativity, all I'm saying was those things kept it from getting a perfect score, but it's still in the, it's still up there. It's way high up there. I mean,
a 7.5 is a failing score, is a failing grade almost.
No, that's it. No. Okay, let's do it out of like 50.
That's a C.
I give a 40 out of 50.
That's an
A. I give it an 80 out of 100.
That's a low B.
C?
Well, if you're on the 10-point scale.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen it in person yet. Maybe that'll change everything.
Maybe. By the way, I like how they use the side. They use the whole hub. Like, they use those side turrets as well.
Yeah, they did.
It's good. Nice. Anyway, okay. That's enough of Happily Ever After. I can't wait to see it in person. And if you go to Magic Kingdom anytime in the future, that is the fireworks show you will be seeing at night. I do want to quickly mention two other news items. First of all, just yesterday, online ordering became available through the app, just at the Pandora restaurant for now, Satouli Canteen. Satouli, I guess that's how you pronounce it.
Satouli.
Satouli, oh.
I have no clue.
Oh, okay. There is an apostrophe, which is always super fun for spelling purposes, but apparently what happens is you, on the app, you can click the restaurant, every menu item is there, you just click what you want, and then you pay with your credit card through the app, and then when you get to the restaurant, your app is telling you, let us know when you're there, so you hit this button saying, I'm here, and that's when they prepare it, and then it shows up at the window down at the end of where you order, and you just go pick it up there. And I assume this will be added to other quick service restaurants in the future, but I think it's a great idea.
That is a good idea. It'd be even better, if not creepier, that you just sit down and they bring it to you using the GPS on your phone.
Oh, yeah.
But I like the idea. That's quick.
Yeah.
No lines.
The other news item has to do with pirates. Did you see this news about the hackers?
I saw it. I didn't click on it. It seemed like fake news to me.
Oh, it's very real. It's just kind of silly, but this is from Deadline. Disney's upcoming Johnny Depp film Pirates of the Caribbean: Dead Men Tell No Tales has been pilfered by ransom hackers seeking payment from the studio. The hackers have demanded an enormous amount of money be paid to Bitcoin. Disney is currently working with the FBI and will not pay. The hackers said they would release bits of the film in increments if their demands weren't met. Disney would not comment, but insiders say that the company refuses to pay.
Wow, it's like life entertainment, life imitating art right there.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Well, it's like, what movie can we start this with?
Yeah. Pirates has been pirated.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's just kind of interesting because we're still a week away from the premiere at this point, but...
I want to give a shout out to an anonymous fan, whoever it was, that signed us up for a contest that we won. We won a print of the Mad Hatter with Queen Elizabeth having a tea party. I thought Derek entered it for us and we won. So I was like, oh, thanks, Derek. It was great. And he was like, no, it wasn't me. So apparently it was some random fan. If that was you, thank you so much. I appreciate it. I received the print in the mail and I love it.
Yeah, that was listener Cass. He saw it on his Instagram feed and I guess thought of us first. So,
well, thank you, listener Cass. It's very kind of you. You could have won this, but instead we did. So,
he won the... You're so not... You so have no idea how this happened. He
signed... No, I don't. I'm telling you. I got a message saying we won something and I was like, oh, okay, cool.
He the person who entered would win the big print, but every person that entered was asked to put the name of someone else who would be interested, and that person won a smaller print.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
So we won the smaller print, he won the big print. Okay, good. Yeah. We're all winners. Good.
And it is kind of funny to me because Mad Hatter and Queen Elizabeth seriously do represent like two things you absolutely love.
Very true. I'm all about, three things I love. Alice in Wonderland, British royalty, and free things. So there
true.
You go.
That's true. All right. Well, now that the news is out of the way, for our first segment, we're going to head to Main Street, USA, where if you look up above the balloon vendors and horseless carriages and shops themed to turn of the century America, you'll find...
Is this about the skywriting Jesus Saves guy?
You'll see some skywriting. Yep.
I'm so glad we're finally doing a segment on him.
Yep. But below the skywriting, you'll find a series of windows, each one having a different person's name stenciled onto the glass. And while many guests probably never take the time to notice these windows, we in the Disney community know just how important they are. Every name stenciled on those windows has a story, an important history with the Walt Disney Company, and we want to make sure we give them credit on our show. So every once in a while, we're going to take a moment to honor those legendary men and women in our new segment, The Windows of Main Street, USA.
They got their name on a window on Main Street, USA.
As Derek said, these windows on Main Street are given in honor of someone or people that meant a lot to either Walt Disney personally, but specifically the Walt Disney Company, and contribute a lot to the parks, the films, or whatever in some capacity. And there is probably not anyone besides Walt's wife, Lily, who contributed more to his life and really the company and Walt Disney World as we know it. No one contributed more probably than Roy O. Disney, Roy Oliver Disney, which was Walt's older brother. And I don't want to give you his whole biography. Let's just suffice it to say that Roy was literally by Walt's side from his birth until his death, literally. And probably one of the things that bound them together was when they both wanted to serve in World War I, and Roy went off to serve, and then Walt came later, but he couldn't actually serve. He was there with the ambulance corps, the hospital corps, whatever it was. And Roy was sent home, and then Walt was discharged. They came back, and they went into this this new adventure together with the animation and then eventually the parks. And again, that's a very, very brief layout that we could talk about. Roy was always, as the older brother, the more logically minded, the more reasonable. He was the pocketbook. He was the purse strings. He was the budget guy. He was the finance guy. And it's a very sweet little partnership they had in that Walt had the dreams, Walt had the visions, Walt put everything up in the air, and then Roy was in charge of finding out how to pay for it and make it happen. And so you really have this wonderful picture of Walt as the visionary and a kid that just wanted to play with all these toys, and Roy more or less as the dad who wanted to buy the toys for the kid to play with. And that's true up until the very end of their life, end of Walt's life, when he sadly preceded his older brother in death, even as Roy was standing there at his feet in the hospital room, as the story goes. So it's fitting, then, that after Walt's passing, Roy himself dedicated what to that point was called Disney World, which he changed affectionately to Walt Disney World, the Walt Disney World Resort, and forever etched his brother's legacy and his name into the resort. So Roy played a big part in Walt's life, and fittingly, he has a window on Main Street, USA.
I think it's important to note, as you mentioned, Matt, that next to Walt Disney throughout his career, there have always been people that have supported him and sort of balanced him out. And that's often overlooked, you know, particularly his wife, his brother Roy, his early business partner Ub Iwerks, who I'm sure we'll talk about eventually. These are people that were not necessarily wanting the spotlight, but were happy to prop Walt up into the spotlight. And without them, he would have failed numerous times.
Yeah.
Yeah, just last week I saw online that it was exactly 50 years to the day since Roy had convinced the county and the state of Florida to let them create a sort of special district. So Walt Disney World and, you know, Walt's proposal for Epcot could be made. This was all Roy O. Disney's doing. And he sat down with the governor of Florida 50 years ago last week, and they signed this law or this legislation that would put into effect the Reedy Creek Improvement District, which of course still exists today, and it's split into the cities or the areas of Bay Lake and Lake Buena Vista. And D23 said that through this financial decision, it was a $400 million project, and it opened in 1971. Walt Disney World did.
Yeah.
And at that time, the company had no outstanding debt, which is really impressive.
It is.
So obviously, Roy, as you said, the financial man, was always on top of things and was much needed in this new venture.
And all the way through the Disneyland and Walt Disney World being built and being pushed to the bankers, Roy was the one who, I mean, if they sent Walt in there, you know, Walt himself talks about, you know, he can paint the prettiest picture for them, but bankers don't care about that. Roy was the one that went in on the front lines with the bankers, getting the loans and getting the investments, bringing Walt's vision into a more logical, money-making, business-savvy communication for them. So you're right. And as far as balancing Walt out, he needed Roy. Roy needed Walt. Walt needed Roy to be Walt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's some. There's a great story, too, about when they were building Disneyland, and Walt, when it came to the castle, he wanted gold spires on top of the castle. And mm-hmm. so he told the construction guys, I don't care what it costs, I want gold spires. And so they started to do the gold spires. And then the next week, Roy showed up and said, what is this cost of gold spires? And they told him, well, that's what Walt wanted. And he said, no, I want them to be gold plated. It's a lot cheaper. We don't need gold, actual gold. And this kind of went back and forth between Walt and Roy and the construction guys until Walt waited till Roy went on vacation for a week and then went ahead and got the gold spires that he wanted to put on top. So they were already installed by the time Roy got back.
That's awesome. I think it's worth noting that this was always going to be called Disney World. At least that was Walt's plan. And then Walt passed, Disney World opened, and it was Roy who insisted that the park be called Walt Disney World as a tribute to his brother, Walter Elias.
And it's also, I think, of note that Walt Disney World opened in October of 1971 and Roy passed in December of 1971. So in a way, it's almost as if he wanted to live long enough to make sure that this project was completed to honor Walt. And then he just kind of passed away.
A little more than 2 months, but yeah, the same year.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Well, and he really pushed forward on that project to make it even possible. I think, you know, once Walt died in 66, and I think there was a lot of confusion as to whether or not how the company would continue, let alone this massive project in Florida.
Absolutely. There's two other places besides the window on Main Street that you can kind of see Roy, and he's honored in a sense, and that is he is with Minnie Mouse at the flagpole in Main Street as a statue. And also in One Man's Dream over at Hollywood Studios, you can see there's a, I don't know if it's life-size because he's kind of short, but it's definitely close to life-size of him standing at the podium giving the opening day commencement ceremony speech at the Magic Kingdom.
Nice.
Assuming that hasn't been turned into a meet and greet yet.
No, I don't think so. Yeah, I had this quote written down. May Walt Disney World bring joy and inspiration and new knowledge to all who come to this happy place. A magic kingdom where the young at heart of all ages can laugh and play and learn together. That was Roy. Mm-hmm. Yep, so next time you're walking down Main Street, take a look at the statue, but also look up above the Main Street confectionery. And right in the center is the money man himself, Roy O. Disney.
I have an interesting little tidbit about the placement of that statue, and this might be just completely speculation. In fact, it is complete speculation. But the fact that statue was there at the beginning of Main Street, when Walt passed and Roy was in the hospital room with him. And if you've never seen the documentary, Walt Disney, the man behind the myth, is that what it's called?
Something like that, yeah. Or the myth behind the magic or something to that effect.
Man behind the man, I don't know. Yeah, it's the most recent kind of documentary from 2006-ish. I don't know. It's really well done and really nice. I don't know if this is in the actual documentary part, I can't remember, or one of the special features about the day Walt passed, but that you hear the story told that Walt was in the hospital room and he had passed, and Roy came down the hallway and was rubbing on Walt's foot. Walt's foot was sticking out of the bed, and Roy was kind of massaging his brother's foot. And he says something to the extent of, well, kid, looks like it's the end of the road. First of all, just go ahead and sob for a while. Second of all, you think about the placement of the statue there at the beginning of Main Street, USA.
At the end of the road.
It's kind of a little ironic twist on it. Yeah, it's the end, but it's actually the beginning, and that Walt's death and his life produced all this wonderful stuff for us to enjoy, and our kids to enjoy. Mm.
Even if that's not real, I'm going to pretend it is.
Yeah, that's why they did that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, it's time for America's favorite segment, Take Five. Thank you. Yes, this is when we throw out a topic and we have five words to describe it. So, are you gentlemen ready?
Yep. Let's do it.
All right, our first category for Take Five: Hollywood Studios slogan during the transition period.
Okay, so picture on signs all around the park. Disney's Hollywood Studios, coming 2019.
Oh. Took me a second. I'm with you now. Gotcha.
Mine goes at the end of maybe a TV spot, and you have, you know, Magic Kingdom, 48 Wonderful Attraction, Epcot, Disney, Animal Kingdom, New Pandora, whatever, and then Hollywood Studios. Yeah, don't come here.
For now.
Yeah.
Right, mine is Disney's Hollywood Studios. Warning, hard hats sold separately.
Because they're constructing.
I get it. I like it.
Our next topic. What partner statue Walt is saying to Mickey Mouse? Go ahead, Matt.
Mine's not very good. That's why I was waiting.
Just like in the most mean girl's voice possible, this is Walt to Mickey. I hate this new hub.
No. He loves it. Well, in my mind, he's pointing to something. So I said, my frozen body is right.
No, he looks happy and he's looking off in the distance because he's talking bad about the hub and the hub's right there. So it's kind of awkward. So he's like, Mickey, don't look now. But I hate this hub.
He's definitely pointing at something, as Derek said. And so what he's saying to Mickey is, avoid those groups with flags.
Yeah. Here they come.
Our next category. An honest tagline for Mission Space. I'll go first. Mission Space. Better than that Fallon ride.
Oh, that's true. They actually should put that sign on the ride. Wow.
This is, yeah.
I said Nintendo 64 with a barf bag. Just because the graphics are
yeah,
not great.
Yeah. I like the barf bag. With barf bag, though. That Nintendo 64, though. Those graphics, though. That's too much for me to... I have to barf bag when I play Nintendo 64. What is this tag category? Mission Space?
An honest tagline for Mission Space.
This is like, you know, like, please ride us. No one's died in a while. Yeah. like 2 months, right? Like 2 months it'd been open, five people died.
I like it. Mm. All right. The internet went all abuzz this week when Paul McCartney, Sir Paul McCartney of the Beatles fame, tweeted a photo of himself in pirate's garb, seemingly to hint at the fact that he is following Keith Richards' legacy and appearing in the latest Pirates film. So, we don't know what his role is or what all it entails, or maybe if he's just being kind of funny or whatever, but it seems to be he's going to be in the film. So, our next five words. What is Paul McCartney's line in the new Pirates film?
Okay, so I'm using a Jeremy here, and I have to have an extra word, so you can either pick the preposition or my indefinite article as my give or take. That's not really a word. Okay?
Okay, we'll allow it.
Imagine this. He appears out of nowhere. Someone asks him a question, like, what's going on here? Why is everybody shooting cannons and stuff?
As they do in those films.
Yeah, what's happening? And he's like, I don't know. Now here's my five words. We all live in a yellow submarine.
That's seven words.
Yeah, it is seven. Okay, so I take the article and the preposition. It's all gone.
Oh, okay.
And then it's, we all live yellow submarine. Like, I don't know what's happening here. If that was his one line, I think that'd be great. Hello. I don't know how to do a British accent like Paul.
Well, speaking of Beatles songs, my answer was Blackbeard Fly Into the Night.
Oh,
it just went really literal on us there.
I like that. Like Blackbird, but
yes,
Blackbeard.
That was my best, not British accent, but pirate accent.
My line comes from the fact that he realizes what he's doing for his career as he's about to deliver his line. And so under his breath, he says, this some Ringo Starr crap right here.
Breaks the fourth wall a little bit. Yeah.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit. Our last category. Johnny Depp, you know, he appeared in the Pirates ride at Disneyland promoting the new Pirates film. And then he also made an appearance at Disney Paris Park. Is that correct? Did I see that on?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. All the cast showed up.
Okay. So they're really, you know, pouring him out for this new Pirates film at Disney Parks. Yeah. And so our next five words are five words about other ways Johnny Depp will appear in a Disney park.
Uninvited, unwelcomed, food service help.
Maybe.
It's like, who's that guy? What's he doing? He didn't wash his hands.
At Tortuga Tavern.
Yeah. You're talking about him climbing on the, just climbing on the building like, sir, we actually just wanted you to do the one thing.
Yeah.
So let me do this. And now I get the British accent. What in the world? And I sound like Ozzy Osbourne. Why he turned into Ozzy, I don't know. Let me just do this.
He's not even British. He's from Kentucky.
Johnny Depp?
Yeah, he was born in Kentucky.
Oh, but he has a British accent.
He does. I think he lived in, or I think he's put on. Maybe it's like a Madonna British accent.
Oh. You know? All right. Other ways Johnny Depp will appear in Disney parks. Kidnapping and ravaging female guests.
Oh, too real. Wow.
No, that is not an attack on his character. That's just a line from the song.
I mean, he is facing allegations that he assaulted his girlfriend.
Yeah, those,
or wife.
Those went away. So, yeah.
Interestingly, disappeared very quickly.
So I put an extra word in my last one, so mine's only four. And sword fights at urinals?
Disney parks love to evoke emotion by tapping into all five of our senses. For instance, we often talk about the music of Walt Disney World, our favorite tunes and background loops that are incorporated throughout the parks. We even did an entire show on our favorite smells at Walt Disney World. But today we're going to focus on the sense of sight, particularly the things you see after the sun goes down. Now, a long time ago, we did an episode about our favorite things to do at Walt Disney World after dark. But today we're going to talk about specifically about things you see, about our favorite nighttime sights. And whether the average guest realizes it or not, Disney actually puts a lot of thought into how it lights up its theme parks, and it uses many different methods depending on the story it wants to tell. So, on today's show, we're going to focus on some of our favorite lights and lighting techniques throughout Walt Disney World.
Are we going to use my title for this?
No, so why don't you go ahead and say it now?
I really think that we should. So this segment is entitled Getting Lit at Walt Disney World.
Yeah. And we're going to start at we're going to start at Magic Kingdom, the best place to do it.
We got a little emotional about Roy already on this episode and just old school kind of things. You can literally trace back the thought and imagination that goes into lighting Disney parks to pre-Disneyland days. And in order to pitch his idea to several bankers and investors at Roy's insistence, Walt had one of his famous background artists that we know from Mary Poppins, Peter Pan, and several other things to draw up a quick sketch. And if you look this up, you'll find that that is a terrible, terrible understatement for what this man produced. It was Peter Ellenshaw, who produced a lot of wonderful nighttime scenes in Mary Poppins. And if you look at what he did, you'll say, oh, I remember that scene. And you'll think, wow, that wasn't video? No, it was a background painting done by this guy. So he did a concept art for Disneyland, a very early concept art to pitch to these investors. And one of the great things about this, that's kind of like so Disney, it's not funny, is that he did on top of the painting, he did some other painting which only became visible under UV lighting or under black lighting, so that when he turned the lights off and turned the black light on, these investors and bankers could see the magic of Disneyland at night. And so he showed places and highlighted where lighting and stuff would be. And from the very beginning, Walt knew that the parks would be a wonderfully different place at nighttime. And so there is a lot of imagineering that even goes into lighting. And it's not just utilitarian. It's not just to get people safely from one place to the other. There's a show element to every single piece of lighting at Walt Disney World.
Yeah. Well, should we start on Main Street USA then?
We should.
Lots of popcorn lights, I think that's the term we like to use, where it just outlines the borders of the building. Very early turn of the century, almost like a boardwalk feel to me.
Yeah, it's got that vibe to it, but it really provides the whole, almost the entire ambient lighting of Main Street USA is that.
It's true.
So you got this wonderful soft, yellow, comforting glow to Main Street throughout the night.
Actually, my favorite lighting, and we've established on an earlier episode that this is part of Main Street USA, is the Hub. And I don't know, I think this is new when they redid the Hub, and now it's like, what is it, Main Street Plaza Gardens or something like that? They've got those trees with the twinkle lights all wrapped up inside them. I really like those.
Yeah. Now, those have always been there.
Oh, okay. I can't remember.
At least the inner Hub has been. Maybe they expanded it to others.
Yeah, but they're great. And they also have those at Disney Springs, but...
They are terrific. Do we just go ahead and label the castle at this point?
Oh, yeah, we should. Yeah.
I mean, you can see it from the TTC all the way across the monorail and the ferry boat lit up at night. Up until a few years ago at nighttime, the castle basically rotated solid colors throughout the night. So it'd be like teal, blue, purple, pink, orange, green, you know, whatever your favorite color, the castle was going to be that at some point. And it was very nice. It wasn't like constantly, it wasn't quickly rotating. It was very slow, and there'd be a slow fade, and it was very nice.
Make it blue. Make it pink.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, they still do this in something random that happened at like 10. It wasn't the kiss goodnight because the park wasn't closed yet. It's just something that just happened at 10. There was this little thing that played and the castle kept changing colors. And it's like, well, that's nice because you still got it. Because now at night, and I love this, the castle is just kind of a subtle, deep, dark blue color. But there's little splashes of yellow where the windows are, or kind of above maybe a bridge that comes out, or above one of the roofs, you can see a little yellow light as if a light has been turned on or something. And it just stays like that. It's very subtle and stately and nice. I didn't mind the rotating colors, but I think this fits the castle much better. And if you look around the castle, you see how much thought and planning is put into the lighting. If you just go by during the day or at night, and you walk up the bridge on either side, or you maybe take the walkway that goes across that Tomorrowland bridge, that where you can see the castle from the side, you see, I mean, there's got to be like 20 different light fixtures per angle that are set at little increments to put this shading there and that shading there and this type of lighting here and this type of lighting there. Who knows how many thousands of dollars are spent just to light the castle perfectly.
It's almost more than you want to see. Like, when you're on that tiny little bridge, you're like, oh, those giant lights look awful, but they serve a really good purpose.
Yeah, unless you were walking up there and, like, literally, like, looked around, like, I'm going to turn around. It's not like, I don't know. I know what you're saying. It doesn't ruin the magic or anything. It's just there are lots of lights up there.
Main Street, I would say, is probably one of my favorite areas of Magic Kingdom at night. But I actually really love Tomorrowland at night. In fact, I would say Tomorrowland's one of the lands that is better looking at night than during the day. And not necessarily where the Speedway is on the backside of Tomorrowland, but that main walkway.
Yeah, that's, let's not even talk about that part.
The main pathway where Monsters and Stitch and the People Mover is going by on both sides. All those neon colors. It almost kind of reminds me of like a futuristic city in a movie. Something like, what's the one with Bruce Willis that has a sequel? Like Blade Runner? No, that's Harrison Ford. Like Blade Runner or like Minority Report, stuff like that. Fifth Element is the Bruce Willis movie. I was thinking Blade Runner. But stuff like that. Terminator, it's a lot more colorful than those movies, but it has kind of the same neon feel.
Yeah, I've always liked that. We jokingly call the things on the left as you're going down there large tanning beds, which is what they look like. But the neon lighting is great. All the different colors. I think, red, green, and blue come to mind immediately more than anything. But certainly a different look than the original Tomorrowland, and it's much more awe-inspiring down that.
It's nice. It's nice lighting.
Yeah, but if you talk about, let's see, if you're talking about good lighting, we can talk about bad lighting. And if we talk about turning left down towards the Speedway, that's where you get your county fair lighting, and it's just so random because you're there in Tomorrowland and all those neon lights and the pretty fixtures and that metallic look, and then you turn left and it's like the remnants of old Tomorrowland are still there, just that kind of speckled popcorn cement and the random white lights. It's just all the magic is sucked out of that area
a little bit. Yeah, it's very stadium-like.
Yeah. But one of the things I've talked about recently was the changes made to Space Mountain. And it had to be in the last year that Space Mountain has always been, even when it was new Tomorrowland, Space Mountain has always been stark, bright white and nothing else. Unless it was like one of the parties, like the Halloween or Christmas parties. And then suddenly, I don't know, maybe in the fall or maybe in the summer, I don't know. I didn't notice the change until I noticed it. There was this wonderful new lighting package on Space Mountain. And it kind of does rotate from like purple to blue to green. But it's very subtle and slow moving. And it's a very deep, bright color that is on it. And it's wonderful because they're so bright that... And, with the kind of the density of the air down here in the summer when it's nice and humid, it kind of provides this glow all around Space Mountain and Tomorrowland when those lights are on. But it's wonderful. It's one of the best improvements lighting-wise that have been made to any of the Disney parks.
Yeah. I noticed it only after you kept talking about it, and I agree. It looks really good. Well, if we're going to move on to Storybook Circus, again, I think this area actually really excels at night. There's something about it that makes it feel like more exciting, maybe. More like an actual circus that's where all sorts of things are happening and it's busy.
Yeah. I might be wrong, but I think that every time we get to a new land, we're going to say this is better at night. And I just think that's so true, because at nighttime with the lighting, you see it the way they want you to see it. And what is highlighted is what they want highlighted.
There's more control. There's more control over the focal points, and you can hide
and the colors. Even just the colors are deeper and better at night with the lighting they've chosen. The Storybook Circus is great too, and you can start with just the sign that goes in with that popcorn carnival circus lighting. That's great. Sounds terrible. You know, so you tell me you're going to put up a carnival looking sign at Walt Disney World, I would break your neck, but it works here going into Storybook Circus.
Yeah. For me, what does it is the lights under Dumbo now. Those bluish lights that light up the water. Love those.
Mm. Hot tub lights.
Well, when you put it like that, it really sucks out the magic.
But all of that is wonderful. As is all of New Fantasyland. You know, if you go over to... Oof. I just got happy thinking about it. If you go over to Little Mermaid, if you go over to that ride, all that wonderful lighting that's in the water itself, shining up on Eric's castle and all that rock work. And it's that deep blue color that just makes you want to jump in the water naked.
I knew that was coming for some reason. Don't know why.
The naked part or the jumping in the water part?
Both. Jumping in the water naked. Comes up about every 5 episodes.
But it comes together.
The naked part caught me by surprise. So
anytime there's water features, I want to just be in it naked. But no, the lighting in the water. I mean, I've loved that since I was little, and I don't know why. When there was lighting in water, like whether it was a swimming pool or a pond or whatever, and the way that it casts the glare of the water on everything around it, and it does that for Little Mermaid. It makes it so immersive, even there in the queue area.
As we continue through Fantasyland, one of my favorite places that's to get lit is by the carousel there behind the castle. When the lights are on at the carousel, it has that... To me, it's hard to explain it without sounding, I don't know, stupid, but... you know, like, when you watch, like, a cheesy romantic movie, like, rom-com or whatever, and they go to like the little county fair or whatever, and the way the carousel is just lit up, and it's kind of always dark surrounding it, I guess because the interior lights are so bright, and it kind of has that little charm to it of a small town fair kind of feel.
I find it interesting that we can all invoke county fair, and it can be at once terrible and at once charming. So we have to notate which it is.
This, for this, the record,
in the best sense.
For the record, I've never actually been to a county fair, just seen them on TV. But that being said, so you have this beautiful little carousel, and then you have behind it the massive castle. And usually it's kind of that contrasting light, because the castle will have like soft colors on it, and then the carousel has like that for lack of a better word, harsh yellowish light. So it really like stands out against the background, and I don't know, I just really like that view. And then I've seen pictures too, especially after it rains, and there's the puddles on the ground.
So you get the
reflections off the puddles that are kind of cool.
You can get those pictures every night because of the rooftop flooding they do for the fireworks show.
No, it's true. You know, photographers wait for that.
Yeah.
So that's a nice view I like.
If I could mention 2 more things in Fantasyland that really I enjoy, and this is going to be a common element for me in these parks, is the Tangled restrooms and the restrooms behind Gaston's Tavern. Really that whole area around Gaston's Tavern. And it's the fact that it's just that soft, yellowish, soft, warm white glow that's not that very lit up. You know, and it's almost to that point of being dangerous, that it's very dim. And when you go back there to those restrooms behind Gaston's Tavern, it's almost to that feeling like, Am I supposed to go like past this point?
Yeah.
Because it's so dim and so dark. The restroom at Tangled Area is very different, but still very dim. And so anytime it's one of those things that invokes or evokes Disney thoughts in my head when I'm somewhere and there's just a very dim, white, yellow-ish, warm light going on when it's otherwise very dark.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of very dark, I think that transitions nicely into Frontierland, which has to be the least lit up area in Magic Kingdom. And that's obviously part of the theming, because in that time they would have had, what, gas lanterns?
Yeah.
And they use those. I love the big...
line the streets, yeah.
Yeah, they line the streets, and the Big Thunder Mountain Queue uses them in a really great way, I think. So yeah, that main thoroughfare is actually very dark, but in a really good way. But for me, the best lighting in Frontierland easily is Big Thunder Mountain.
Yes.
Once again, it's that bluish kind of glow around it. But the more I ride Big Thunder Mountain, the more I love it, because there are so many scenes in it that you really don't even see unless you make a point to like stretch your neck and look over sides. Yeah, like the horses that actually move, the audio animatronic horses, and there's the goat, and there's like the blast sights and all this stuff. And every single scene is lit up so you can see it at night, but it's done in a really subtle, almost beautiful way. I love that ride at night. And we've talked about how it's a fun experience at night just because it's dark outside. But even beyond that, the lighting of this attraction is good.
If you can ever like get on the Walt Disney World Railroad, more or less in the fall and winter, if you can ever get on the Walt Disney World Railroad when it's dark, that's one of the primary reasons to ride that, is that you get to slow drive by the flooded town scene from Big Thunder Mountain.
Oh, yeah.
And when you go by there at night, it's wonderful. And again, it's one of those things that nighttime just, it's as if you were going, if you were looking at a set from a movie, or if you were you're getting to tour a set from a Broadway musical or something, and they just had all the lights on, it'd be like, ah, okay, well, that's nice. It's cool to be here. But when they turn the lights off and all the stage lighting comes on, that's when it really comes to life. And that's exactly what happens at all these places. And this is one of those. Big Thunder Mountain is one of those.
Totally. Yeah, that's a great point. Stage lighting.
I'm good at illustrations.
You are. Mm. Well done.
You just paint a picture in my brain. Mm. And the lighting is beautiful in that picture.
Let's not... you mentioned Frontierland, and it has always been one of my favorites as far as lighting, because it's so dim and dark. Now, here's where it gets me these days. That little, I don't want to call it the boardwalk, because that's not very westerny, but the little wooden river walk kind of thing, it's parallel to the main area, but it's more rickety feeling. It's out on the water.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a parade bypass when you don't want to stand and watch the parade. That's where it's still very dimly lit, especially in that bridge going over to
Big Thunder Mountain.
Big Thunder Mountain is where it gets really dark, and it's like, this is kind of dangerous, but never change it. They put some big old bright lights in the main thoroughfare where you're talking about, I think, kind of coming up over Pecos Bill. There are like a big giant tree light, and it's disheartening because it's not like what they chose to do at World Showcase, where that stage lighting appears at night. And it's like different colors and blue and pink and yellow and stuff that lights up the sidewalk. And it adds to the experience. These are just white lights. It's just a tree of white lights. And it's very disheartening right there nowadays.
Oh, I haven't even noticed.
I don't know if they just got too many complaints about not being able to see or what, but...
Well, let's go back to that Riverwalk path a little bit, because I'm going to tell you, this is going to come up a few times, especially in Epcot, but I'm a sucker for lights around bodies of water, because it reflects on the water. And that's one of the reasons I love standing on that bridge and looking at like Harper's Mill over there, or especially when the Liberty Square riverboat comes around the corner and it has those popcorn lights, one on each row of the boat, so like three levels of the boat, and there's just one row of bright lights that goes all the way around it, and when it reflects off the rivers of America, it is so pretty to me, and I can just stand there, and the way the water like ripples, and so the lights kind of ripple as well. Love that so much.
Yeah, and there's some good Disney photographers that are able to capture those moments and then like enhance them to where
not
they just look amazing.
Yeah.
Not to mention any reflection of anything that is illuminated at Walt Disney World. So the castle in Rivers of America, or the little waterway that comes by the castle. Anytime you get that and the riverboat in it.
Magic.
You might say a haunted mansion is magical because of the absence of lighting. And at nighttime, it can be kind of hard to see.
They keep it dark. Yeah.
It's just kind of a blue glow up there. Unless you're at the Halloween party where it like kind of lightnings and stuff. I think it should do all the time.
I love that.
Yes.
And the fog.
And the fog. Yes. The fog is great around there because, boy, you talk about just a little bit of creepiness. Just enough creepiness to make you go, this is not Disney friendly.
Yeah.
Fog.
Fog with thunder and lightning and your...
Yeah.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you. So I think the only land we have left is Adventureland.
Which, as I was thinking about this, the lighting there doesn't compare really to other places. Because it's mainly... Like, the paths are very dark, which is fine. But I can't really think of any lighting that really, like, sticks out to me.
Well, part of it for me is I love Adventureland so much during the day that I like it as much at night. But for me, I don't think it's better at night, necessarily.
The main lighting comes from, like, inside the attraction queues. Like,
yeah,
there's really no good exterior lighting on Pirates, at least none that makes you be like, ooh. But it's very well lit into the beginning of that queue.
Very understated.
Same with Jungle Cruise.
Well, I was going to say, Jungle Cruise queue is actually probably my favorite area in Adventureland at night because for some reason, well, you're going to know why, because it's super hot. During the day when you're in that queue, it feels like you're in a jungle and it's like, oh, get me out of here. But at night, it almost feels like you should be hearing the bugs and there should be like mosquito nets around and you've got the very subtle lanterns hanging and it really does feel like you're in the jungle somewhere. I love that.
I love Jungle Cruise at night.
Yeah.
From the queue to the ride itself. And it seems like something that where you'd say, well, you can't see anything. Well, you're stupid because Disney thinks about that for you. And again, you're seeing it as they would want you to see it. So each set piece that you're supposed to see is lit. And it's lit. And the boat has a light that comes on that shines all around it where you can see everything. One place, there is one element of Adventureland that is unique to Adventureland that you can't find anywhere else in the Magic Kingdom. That is fire. Actual fire. If it's working, the torches around the Sunshine Terrace... actually, it's Aloha Isle now. So over there next to the exit of the Tiki Room, there's those little idol statues on top of the roof holding torches. And most of the time, they're actually on and working. Over across from what is now the Sunshine Tree Terrace, where the smoking section is, used to be a lot of real torches. And I guess that just became more of a hazard than a help. So I think those are gone. But you can still find that fire... the torches on top of Aloha Isle at the Tiki Room, which is certainly an extra bit of ambiance that is unique to Adventureland.
Well, they figured the guests were bringing their own torches when they light up their cigs.
That's right. The Bic torches.
You know, probably what happened is the torches were there and somebody forgot their lighter one day.
That's
and
right.
tried to light it up that and lit their face on fire.
So since we made this a smoking section, we just got to get rid of the torches.
Well, I mean, after under new management burned, I am kind of surprised that they ever still use fire over there.
Listen, I'm still not convinced under new management was not arson. And I'm fine with it. I'm just saying I'm not convinced it was.
Yeah. I applaud it. Are you kidding?
It's encouraged. In fact, whoever did that, there's something else over in Tomorrowland you can take care of while you're at it.
Well, anyway, that's Magic Kingdom, a wonderful park in the daytime, but maybe even especially wonderful at night. And it's all because of Disney's lighting. Let's move over to...
I was just going to say, as we move over to Epcot, can we talk about the resort on the way there that has good lighting?
Ooh, I'm intrigued.
And that is... Polynesian.
Okay.
Which particularly when you're on the monorail, I love how they particularly light up the corners of the buildings with the lights. Have you ever noticed that? So it really focuses, makes the buildings look taller, in my opinion, than what they are. And then they also have the torches lit up, or at least they did at time along the pathways. So I get a very Polynesian vibe as I go by.
For sure. I think it's safe to say there's more to talk about at Magic Kingdom than the other parks. So hopefully these last three, we can just kind of hit on some of our highlights. So moving on to Epcot, like what are your favorite lights at Epcot?
First of all, the ball. Love it.
Sure. Sure.
No, but Spaceship Earth. Yeah.
You kid, but Spaceship Earth,
I don't kid.
I was going to say, oh. I think he's for real, and I agree.
No, I agree too. I'm amazed at some of the colors that they're able to get off of that. Particularly like the purples and the pinks that they sometimes use. It just makes that the geosphere or whatever it is.
Geodesic sphere
just really pop. And it's one of those things that I've seen pictures of people pictures that people post online of it. Yeah. And it really, at first I always think, wow, they really did a lot of additions to that or a lot of editing. But then when you see it in person, you're like, no, that's just holding up an iPhone and taking a picture, and it really looks that good in person.
It does. And yeah, there are layers. And I'm thinking particularly just kind of the blue and then the purple and then the genius splash of that yellowy orange that just makes the blue and the purple pop out. But it's really an interesting thing to see how they light it, because there's like there's multiple tiers to the whole thing. There's like the underside, and then there's kind of the midway, and then you kind of get further out and you can see where they cast it as far up as they can go to really literally the only dark spot at night would almost be like the crown of the thing where you can't see it anyway.
It's true.
But they've thought long and hard about how to light that thing all the way around and make it really stand out at night. And it is the focal point of the entire park. More so than any other park's focal point is, that one is the focal point.
But then they ruin it with some 90s lasers and Siemens.
Oh, see, I like that stuff. I like the 90s lasers.
Well, while you're looking up at Spaceship Earth, don't forget to look down, because the LED lights in the pathways are so wonderful.
Yeah. There are two on either side as you go in or come out at night, which, you know, that's up to you. Or just go over there and stand. You're not really going anywhere. But there's also that little extra area. If you were walking into Epcot, you're not leaving, you're walking into, and you go to the right of Spaceship Earth, as if you were going to turn right to go to the land, Imagination, all that. There's a little segment over there in the Spaceship Earth, like courtyard area, that's got fiber optic, not just LED, but kind of some fiber optic lights.
Wait, which one, is it LED or fiber optic that like creates the shapes? Because it shows like this weird like star pattern type thing. I think that's fiber
optics. Okay. Yeah.
Because you just get like random twinkly ones, but then you get the colored ones that form shapes.
Yeah, and those are all wonderful.
Yeah, I like
that. And you only see them at night.
Right, that's how lights usually.
That's lights.
Yeah.
And would we not be remiss if we left out the Fountain of Nations?
Sure.
Which is not completely, you know, it's not necessarily an eye, like a focal point for lights, but it is lit at night, and they still do the little shows and stuff at night.
They do. I guess it doesn't stand out to me because they don't do anything special with the lights. They just light it because if they didn't, people would be like walking into the fountain, like, oh, there's water here.
It might be a little, and it's come to think of it, it might be a little too busy if they did crazy lighting stuff with it, don't you think?
Maybe, but why can't they do like green for 10 minutes and then like a nice little red for 10 minutes?
Yeah.
It's just kind of lit, period.
Yeah, lit, light it up.
Drink!
Yeah.
Two attractions that are well lit in Future World. I think as much crap as we give this attraction, I think that Mission Space is well lit. As far as they do a good job of making that Mars.
And the material of it helps, that metallic kind of shiny reflective material.
Yes. And then I love the way that Test Track is lit up at night as well. And because it's a very subtle, but it's got a lot of those neons, that sleek neon feel that matches the inside of the attraction.
Yeah, I'll give you that. Most of my favorite lights for Epcot were in are in World Showcase. I guess I just kind of passed on by Future World.
Well, let's move to World Showcase then.
Okay. For me, Morocco always stands out. I guess it might be the darkest, which is kind of odd that it's one of my favorites for the lighting, but the way maybe
there's a story behind that, if you didn't know. And the reason why it's darkest and it's not lit up during illuminations either is because I've read this on several Disney things. I don't know if it's true, but it seems to be, the consensus. And that is, in the Islamic tradition, you don't light up your buildings. And so they don't put a lot of exterior lighting in Morocco as part of that cultural tradition.
I believe that, because I don't think they necessarily like put spotlight beams on the side of the buildings, but specifically some of the lights I like are, as you're like going under archways, they've got those hanging lights on chains.
Okay.
And they're like these glass hexagonal lights, and then around the glass are like these metalwork, really intricately detailed pieces that kind of frame the glass hexagonal pieces. And they're really, really ornate and pretty. I love them.
Yeah, I love that. Anything like that, I love. That Moroccan look to things. It's one of the reasons I love that some of those same kind of pendant lights that hang down at Pirates of the Caribbean. And over at the bathrooms to Pirates, especially. Because there's a lot of nice cultural interchange between that kind of Spanish colonial and Moroccan style, and they both remind me of each other a lot.
What's your favorite pavilion at night?
At night?
I mean, yes, for an episode about the lights of Walt Disney World, I would like you to narrow it down to nighttime.
I'm going to say mine while you're thinking, and mine is France. I like France because you have the Eiffel Tower lit, you have the buildings lit, and then you have that fountain. That's really lit there.
That's true.
Everything's, it's all lit up, folks, at night. They light things up.
Yeah, see, France could not be more opposite from Morocco, I think, because I think France is the brightest. Like, the outlines of the buildings are lit up, which kind of makes sense because it's like the city of Paris, which kind of is always lit up.
It's the city of lights. If I can't say France.
Is it the city of lights?
It is.
What is it called?
See? Yeah.
About that. Like, see, all comes together.
The buildings are lit, the tower's lit, the fountain's lit, and if you're there on a good night, I'm lit as well.
That has been implied the whole time.
And it never stops being funny. That's why I keep saying it.
It keeps working. If I can't pick France, which I would have, and I can't pick Morocco, which I think would have been my favorite, I'm going to go with Norway. And even in its current iteration, when you get tucked back in there with the bakery and the ride, and really it's the lighting they cast up on the facade that looks like the towering, you know, castle above you on the mountaintop. I just love that just subtle white accent lighting.
Hmm. Honorable mention to the Mexico Pavilion as well.
Yeah, for sure. Even on the inside, they have those string lights that go from one balcony to another. And I don't know what they are. They look like little tin cans with candles in them or something.
Yes,
that's probably what it is.
It might be.
It is Mexico.
If I ever build a house, I want the inside, at least like my living room. Like, I want a giant living room that's like two stories that I can theme to look like the inside of the Mexico Pavilion. Wouldn't that be amazing?
It's always nighttime in there.
Yes.
I would totally hang out in there. Because the fountain has lights in it, too. It's so pretty.
Mm. Did we talk about World Showcase in general? Did y'all just do that?
Oh, no, but we should. Because when you look over the lagoon and just see, like, three or four countries in a row, and once again, reflected off the water, like, you just cannot beat that view.
If you're ever there on a full moon evening or sunset, I mean, you just can't beat World Showcase Lagoon.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, at night, see, they do safe pathway lighting very well at Epcot. And I might point out that it has been there since the mid-90s in its current iteration. And that is, if you look around at nighttime, and I think they only emerge at night. I think they might be like like hydraulics or something, that these light trees just come out at night and they light the path. But it's not just that Frontierland tree of white lights. It is like blues and pinks and purples, and it's enough for you to see and to walk, but it's not taking away from the quote-unquote, it's not taking away from the show, and it's not just washing out the pavement in some whatever. It's adding color and it's adding dimension. And then on top of that, you've got the torches on the lagoon that have been there since 1999, 2000, that are adding a wonderful ambiance to the whole lagoon.
Those torches. Ugh, I live for those things.
Fire.
Yeah. I mean, really, it's as simple as that. Fire and water.
So primal.
All right, well, let's head to Hollywood Studios. I don't know about you guys, easily my favorite area in Hollywood Studios is Sunset Boulevard at night. You've got the neon lights on the storefronts, a very early Hollywood feel. And as I think, Matt, you've mentioned, even the palm trees are well lit. Because they're so high up in the air that if they weren't, like, you wouldn't be able to see them.
Which I might just say, they do this specifically at Hollywood Studios. Now, they put in some LED lights at some of the palm trees around Spaceship Earth. And that's appreciated. But they really do highlight them at Hollywood Studios. And I guess because that fits, you know, the vibe, Hollywood, California, that kind of stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, but they're kind of, it's what you would call well lights. And they are kind of just flush in the ground lights that shine up onto the palm trees. Very tall.
Yeah, they're great. And they almost serve as like a frame for.
Yes, they do.
Tower of Terror at the end.
Yes.
Which is, it's like blue.
Yeah, it's wonder. It's like the Haunted Mansion. It's like, yeah, we could throw all kinds of crazy light on this thing and really draw attention to it, but it's even better in that it's almost like black lit. It's almost so blue, it's purple.
Yeah, it does remind me of black lights now that you say that.
So really the only thing that stands out is the janky Hollywood Tower Hotel sign, which is genius in itself because it's neon. And parts are missing, and parts are flickering, and they're kind of different colors. And I mean, it's just that's just Disney genius.
Yeah, I agree. Sunset Boulevard at night is a great place to be. I mean, it gets a little crowded.
Were you going to say lit?
No, I was going to say wonderful. I keep saying wonderful, but it's just my favorite area of that park, daytime or nighttime. So
yeah. Something new, it's not new, it's old, but it feels new to many Disney Parks fans, is the nighttime lighting on the Chinese Theater, which for the past decade had been obscured by the hat. It's got its own, and it's very subtle. It's not changing colors or anything crazy, but it's the paint colors on the actual building are accentuated at night, even down to the that kind of, you know, when you have the copper and it, over time it turns green. So on the turrets and on the main roof where they've made that effect kind of come to life with the paint, you can see that kind of teal highlighted there on the roof and the turrets, and then the red columns and the red frame, and I think that's all very wonderful. What are you snickering at with turrets? Don't you like turrets?
I love the turrets when they're all lit up in the bathrooms.
I was like, what is funny about that? But
well, shall we move to Animal Kingdom?
Well, real quick.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, sorry. Mercy.
Well, my next pick for Hollywood Studios is once again going to be water themed because the boat SS Down the Hatch has that one row of just light bulbs that goes all the way around it. And, I mean, there's more than the one row, but like every time you see lights, it's in just like one strip of light bulbs, like the popcorn lights. And it's so bright. And normally it'd be like, whoa, calm down. What's with the lighting? But it really works on that boat. And once again, you're seeing the reflection off of Echo Lake. So it's just even more grand.
I would just say Echo Lake.
Yeah, that's true.
From Gertie, her the yellow glowing eyes, and the lighting in that wonderful little pool, Echo Lake itself, and it's that kind of thing where there's little magical elements, but it's not over the top, and you know Hollywood and Vine and 50s Primetime are there, and they have their own lighting, but it's not distracting or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that was my last one, Echo Lake. I'm glad you went there with the ship.
But yeah, we can go ahead and move on to the final park, the newest park, and the park with the newest land that the three of us have not seen in person, but that's Animal Kingdom.
Okay.
Not a zoo.
My favorite land in Animal Kingdom at night has got to be...
Yes.
Asia.
Yep.
And yes. Particularly that view that you get from that photo spot by the monkeys looking towards Expedition Everest, where the mountain is lit, you see the walkway is lit beautifully, and that is a postcard moment.
Well, now, Jeremy, I'm going to break it to you a little bit, because you haven't been since they've built the stadium for Rivers of Light, and that view has changed quite a bit now at nighttime.
No.
It's just like there are so many more lights now because they have to light up the whole stadium now.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, they're good lights. It's not like stadium lighting.
So it sucks now.
No,
can't have nice things.
I wouldn't say that, but it was nice to like see only the mountain reflected off the water, and then to your left, the pathway leading up to the mountain. It's got those strings of lights just single light bulbs hanging. I love those things, but now it's like three times more lit than it used to be because of all the seating.
Oh, it's that bar that's in there now.
I take it back. My favorite land lit at night is Africa.
Okay.
Well, we could go, I mean, I could say the Discovery Gardens, Africa, Discovery Island, for all the same reason. It's just subtle and very natural. And Discovery Island is very dark at night. It's Animal Kingdom, it's one of those crazy things where the lighting is so natural and it's so dim and it's so understated that you can look to your left and your right as you're crossing over the river, going back to the oasis as you're leaving or coming in. If you look to your left and right in the trees, you'll see tons of just white little fluffy balls sitting in the tree. And it's those birds, and they go up there to sleep at night. But it's like hundreds of them. And you don't notice it till you just stop and look. You say, that's what they are. And they just go up there and sleep. But that's how natural and understated the lighting is. And it's wonderful. And I haven't seen the Tree of Life since they've done some of the new things at night. But I'm sure it's wonderful.
It is gorgeous. It really is. I feel like it had to have been lit up before they started these shows. Like, they had to have done something to it.
It had the just white lights.
Oh, okay.
Just kind of the accent, kind of.
No, it's so pretty now. Blues and greens, and they even, like, light up, like, inside the branches and everything. Oh, I just love it. It's a sight to see. But it is a very dark park. Like, you definitely understand why they waited so long to do nighttime at Animal Kingdom. Just because if you're going to keep the theming, you really kind of have to use minimal lighting because you're in a village in Africa, you know?
Yeah.
And they do a good job of it.
You don't want to rave on and on about Chester and Hester's and how legitimately podunk it looks at night.
Well, I mean, it's keeping with the theme.
They actually used non-working light bulbs in county fairs, so we went out and bought 50 broken light bulbs. Or no, better yet, we broke them ourselves. We brought working light bulbs and broke them ourselves.
All right, well, way to end it on a bummer note, Matthew.
Oh, it's all beautiful.
Oh, there we go. And we're back on track. No, but I'm really excited to see Pandora at night, because I assume that will be really, it will be even more special at night. So I'm looking forward to seeing what that adds to the nighttime atmosphere at Animal Kingdom. But we'll have to bring you that review in a few weeks. Until then, I'm going to wrap up this episode. Go to Walt Disney World. Look at the lights. Appreciate them. They're wonderful. And we'll see you back here after you do it. You can go find us online. Instagram at Mad Chatters. Twitter at Mad Chatters. Facebook. Send your emails to comments@madchatters.net. And hey, if you got a second and you haven't left us a review on iTunes, we would really appreciate that. But we'll see you next week.
Which is Navi for take a little time to find the magic in every day.
Bye-bye now. Let's see Roy and Minnie. Which, why Minnie? I mean, it just...
Well, because Mickey's with Walt, and you have to have the next best thing.
I mean, I guess. I just would have put Roy there at the end of the street, like with his money bag or something.
I think it... Scrooge McDuck.
He's got a calculator.
Oh, that's great.
What is all this going to cost?
Avoid those groups with flags.
Yeah.
You and those flags.
Here they come.
Excuse me?
Here they come, flags. making Here they all come, right. Making noise.
Our next group. Our next five words.
Category is the word, I believe, Bob.
And take two.
Take
our
five.
Next
category. I was also trying to... Oh, no, that's the next one. Yep, go ahead.
A random laugh.
That laugh was horrible.